This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're listening to the theme Elmer Bernstein composed for the new movie Far From Heaven. The theme just won the LA Film Critics Association Award for Best Music Score. If it seems to have a 1950s sound, that's intentional. The movie is set in the 50s, and it's an homage to Douglas Sirk's melodramas of that decade. Far From Heaven stars Julianne Moore and Dennis Quaid as a seemingly perfect couple. He's an executive, she's a beautiful wife and mother who keeps an impeccable home. But beneath the surface, things are turning sour. He is a repressed homosexual who can no longer bear physical contact with his wife. She is falling in love with a very intelligent and sensitive gardener who is African-American. Julianne Moore just won the Best Actress Award from the LA Film Critics Association for Far From Heaven and the new film The Hours. Here's a scene from Far From Heaven at a cocktail party in the couple's home. She is serving drinks. He has had too many. But the guests still believe in the facade.
Oh, by golly, there she is now, the prettiest gal in her room.
Oh, Stan, liquor brings out the Texan in you. I hope Eleanor isn't listening.
So what if she is? I still say Frank is the luckiest guy in town.
Here, here.
It's all smoke and mirrors, fellas. That's all it is. You should see her without her face on.
Frank? No, he's absolutely right. We ladies are never what we appear, and every girl has her secrets.
I'll say.
How about this girl going and getting her husband another drink?
Darling, don't you think you've already had it?
No, I don't think I've had it.
I'd just like to take a moment to raise a glass to our marvelous host and hostess and another glorious annual party at the Whitakers. To Frank and Kathy. Truly, Mr. and Mrs. Magnatech.
Yeah.
My guest Todd Haynes wrote and directed Far From Heaven. His other films include The Velvet Goldmine, Safe, and Poison. Later we'll meet the film's production designer, Mark Friedberg. Todd Haynes, welcome back to Fresh Air. Are there specific Douglas Sirk films that you're paying homage to in Far From Heaven?
Yeah, there's definitely a film that we looked at probably more than the others, and it's a film that's not quite as well known as his really famous and wonderful films, Imitation of Life and Written on the Wind. It's a film called All That Heaven Allows with Jane Wyman and Rock Hudson, and it was a follow-up to his first huge hit, the film that made Rock Hudson a star, called The Magnificent Obsession. But All That Heaven Allows is great because it has a much quieter domestic kind of setting and theme. It's really just simply about the divorced older woman who strikes up a romance with the sort of visionary gardener played by Rock Hudson, and the sort of subsequent crises that ensue, you know, in the rigid town. And people who know Far From Heaven will already see big similarities.
It's quite a scandal because he's a much younger man.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, people think of 50s melodramas as being hopelessly dated and even unintentionally campy in their soap opera-like plots. What do you love about the stories?
I guess Sirk brings a certain kind of acuity to his look at American sort of bourgeois middle class life, you know, at that time. In fact, when he talks about in interviews in the late 60s, when he talks about this period of his filmmaking, he's surprised that people feel sentimental about his films at all. But there is a sort of critique that he's playing out visually, and that kind of works against the grain of the sentimentality. And I think it's one of the reasons why his films remain really interesting to people today.
No, the taboo that's explored in the Sirk movie, All That Heaven Allows, is, you know, an older woman falling in love with a younger man and he falling in love with her. You've built your plot in Far From Heaven around a couple of things that were so taboo in the 50s, you couldn't even have shown them in the 50s. One in your film is that the husband realizes that he's really gay, and his wife, who is white, falls in love with an African-American. You couldn't have shown that in the 50s. Did you intentionally go for things that you knew would have been taboo in the 50s?
It was a balancing act, I think, in my thinking when I was writing the script. And because on the one hand, yes, I'm exploring, I think, the theme that's absolutely impossible, it would have been impossible to depict at that time, would be the gay themes that Dennis Quaid's character struggles through. The racial themes, there were actually some amazing films from the 50s and even the late 40s that got pretty close to some of the themes we explore in Far From Heaven. But more, I think, rather than it being a film about, you know, that takes on the 50s style but ventures into places 50s films wouldn't have gone, I think what's almost more weird and noteworthy about it is how restrained that we impose the same restraint on these kinds of themes that you would see from films at that time. And in fact, I think it actually makes the themes and the events in the film stronger because they're so sort of minimally excavated. They're really, we're just touching on the bits of information that you need to know without really fully delving into what Quaid's sexual quest is all about and what really happens to him behind closed doors.
Now, the two films that Cirque made with Jane Wyman and Rock Hudson, Magnificent Obsession and All That Heaven Allows, they have happy endings. Your film doesn't.
No.
If I'm not giving away too much by saying that.
No.
Was that a conscious decision that things were not going to be resolved in a happy way?
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, I mean, one interesting thing about Cirque, and he writes about this, is that he was very well aware that his endings were insufficient and that they left you kind of wanting and they didn't really resolve the conflicts that his films explored. So they were kind of false happy endings, as he described them. And I like that idea, but I think at a certain level, Terry, I wanted to make a movie that really did make people cry, that really got under your skin in ways you might not see coming as it starts out, and that you really feel caught up in. And so for me, it had to have a sort of more hopeless ending.
So instead of saying, well, society is repressive, but love conquers all, and people, when you scratch beneath the surface, are basically good, your film is saying society is really repressed and there can virtually be no real happy endings in such a repressive society.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's lovely about these kinds of films is the onus is put onto the society. That's the villain in these films. There's no individual that you could sort of single out and say, oh, without that person involved, everything would be fine. The best melodramas really are ones that find really ordinary people caught up in very simple, you know, tangles of need. And when those needs aren't fulfilled, or when somebody takes a sort of a slightly dangerous step outside of the prescribed options, you know, everybody suffers. And I think that's just more true to how we all experience our lives and the constraints that we live under.
Let's talk about the look of your film, Far From Heaven. Did you want it to have that 50s, I mean, obviously you did want it to have that 50s Technicolor look that Douglas Sirk's films had.
Yeah, absolutely. What's really amazing about almost, I imagine almost any chapter of interesting Hollywood filmmaking that you go back to and you really focus on and dissect and analyze is that you'll learn a whole wealth, a whole new language, basically. Languages that have often just sort of disappeared from our vernacular today that are beautiful, rich, languages of color and decor and costume and but they serve the story. They're not separate from what these kinds of stories are and what they're trying to express. So to us, it was a language that was absolutely particular to the kind of story we were making. It wasn't like we were just imposing a 50s style on some, you know, plot.
Let me bring Mark Friedberg into the conversation. He's the production designer for All That Heaven Allows and also was production designer for the films The Ice Storm, Runaway Bride, and Pollock. Mark, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
When you started working with Todd Haynes on Far From Heaven, did you go back and watch Douglas Sirk films? Had they been important to you before making this film?
They had been films I had seen, but I hadn't ever really watched them for what they had to offer visually, at least as far as the work I had been doing.
What struck you most when you watched them as research for Far From Heaven?
Well, it was when we, as Todd said, when we dissected them, when we took them apart, what was most striking about them was actually how theatrical the worlds that these characters lived in were, how emotional, almost, you could say, by virtue of the fact that all the visual elements were heightened. And we got very involved in really, I think, a very vibrant palette of complementing colors and color temperatures that sort of allowed there to be provided a tension visually, I think, that very much underscored the tension that the characters were feeling.
So you saw the visual vibrance of the film and the saturated colors as being in intentional contrast to the repressed emotions that the characters have.
It's almost that, in a way, for me, it became almost that, by, you know, the characters are so stuck with their own emotions, so unable to do anything with the true emotions that they feel, that they almost had to come out through in the world that they lived in, that they mm-hmm. saturated themselves into the world that they were, the place that these characters were living in. I mean, we also were creating a world that was specific to this family at their economic level at that time in the world, but was very sort of particular to the 50s, in fact, when it was really an ideal. And we were creating, an idealized sense of what this world might be.
My guests are Mark Friedberg, the production designer of the new film Far From Heaven, and Todd Haynes, the film's writer and director. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Todd Haynes, the writer and director of the new film Far From Heaven, and Mark Friedberg, the film's production designer. When we left off, Friedberg was saying that the vivid and idealized world they've created in the film is an intentional contrast to the repressed emotions of the main characters. Describe the world a little bit by describing their home. And this is a couple, you know, she's the perfect housewife, and he is an executive at Magnatech, which is like a fledgling television company.
The home, I think, is very much an extension, or at least we looked at it as an extension of Kathy's world, in that truly it's her story, even though a lot happens to these other characters. As well, we were creating a set, I think, that spoke to the history of sets. We quite often create worlds where you really don't want to notice that they exist, that they seem very natural to the place, that they seem very naturally the place where their characters are living. And I think we were trying to create that, but also a place that you recognized as a setting, as almost one step removed from what it might actually really be.
Kind of an ideal, like almost wish fulfillment of what women at this particular time aspired to. What's so fun, what was great with Mark and I, is just this sort of ridiculous loop that we took, where we're not really making a film about Hartford, Connecticut in 1957. We're making a film about how a Hollywood soundstage backlot mentality would interpret Hartford in 1957. But of course, we were a low-budget independent production that had to apply these kinds of demands on what was half a location shoot in New Jersey and half a soundstage, a shoot on a beautifully built set that Mark designed.
What was it about the soundstage look that you wanted?
Everything. I mean, the control. I mean, I think the best possible thing is to settle on the stage finally after the craziness of location shooting and be in a controlled setting, where the kind of detail we were looking at in terms of the architecture of space and the ways that literally Mark could construct a set that would set up the kinds of shots of a kind of claustrophobia at times, where there'd be oppositional high and low angles, but he could actually build steps that go down into the living room and then or go up into the living room and they go further up into the music room, and then we could place characters on these various levels and intensify those high low oppositions so the ceiling feels like it's looming down over characters. Or it was just an amazing opportunity for me to construct an architecture that would support the aesthetic kind of suggestions that we were trying to make visually in the film.
Color is really important in the film. The colors are very saturated, very rich. Did you have like a color code that you went into this with? Like, talk a little bit about how you chose the color themes for different scenes and for different characters.
Yeah, color was sort of everything in this film. And it started in a sort of intuitive way with myself just going through the scenes and creating these sort of spectrums of colors with color swatches that were ways I could start to communicate the moods I was looking for to the creative departments. And then I'd sit down with Mark and Sandy Powell, the costume designer, and Ed Lockman, the director of photography. And we'd sit for really days and meticulously go through the film and begin to talk about these sort of almost, you know, unverbalizable issues about color. And the cue that Mark was talking about earlier that we took from Cirque was that his use of color was so much more subtle and complex than you see in movies today, where color is sort of one note application of blue is sad or scary and warm, you know, yellow gold is happy or nostalgic. There was always complementary colors. There was always warms and cools interacting in his frames, you know. And it just deepened and made more, I think, subtle and rich the emotional themes of the film. And so that was our strategy. And we talked about ways that the warms and cools would kind of develop as in opposition to each other. And sometimes the warms would be dominant and Kathy would be in the one cool color in the scene. Or, you know, we'd place characters in opposition to the general thing. Or it would just be the use of light and decor interacting.
Is there a specific scene where you can describe how the colors are used and what you think it does to the experience of watching the movie?
Well, I mean, one of the things we learned from Cirque specifically was the way he enhanced the perception of night, especially as it's seen through a window. And in the scene with Dennis Quaid and Julianne on the couch after the party, the blueness of the night, it looms there, and it's ominous, and but it's also beautiful and enticing at the same time. And that's one example where it's a little bit on the nose. But the other thing that we often did with color was, as we did in that scene, was while there may be a dominant blue theme somewhere going on in the frame, we also complemented that with a warm somewhere else. And I think that's what gives the movie its vibrancy. It's not just that there's bold colors, but it's the way that colors are used in conjunction and in opposition to one another. As a sort of different, you know, in ways that can both create attention or soothe a moment.
Todd, did you use any rear projection in the movie?
Oh yeah, we did. We did in the classic, for people who don't really know what that is, the basic way that people identify it is in the old-fashioned projected screen behind the car shot, where if you visited Universal Studios, you'd get to climb into the half car, and they'd turn the screen on of the street going by, and you'd feel like just one of those old-fashioned movies.
Instead of you driving in the car,
yes,
you're sitting still in a car, but there's a film behind you of the scenery passing by, so it looks like you're actually driving, but that's just an optical illusion.
Exactly. And what's funny is rear projection is still used today in action films and in a lot of ways, very subtly, and it doesn't mm-hmm. call attention to itself in ways that a contemporary audience might notice in old films. But we wanted to have that kind of beautiful artifice in a lot of places in this film. And so what was really exciting is we actually rummaged through with some great research people and got our hands on the actual rear projection plates, the films from Cirque, from Written on the Wind.
Wow, you're kidding.
That Dorothy Malone is driving her bright red, you know, sports car. We have that backdrop plate. So when Julianne Moore is leaving her house after the NAACP kids come by knocking on her door and she's going to drive past Raymond's Garden Shop, the first rear projection that you see is actually from Written on the Wind.
That's amazing. It was a thrill to find it.
Oh, God. It was such a pivotal moment for us. And it was actually our very last day of shooting that we did all the rear projection stuff. So it was kind of a nice culmination to the whole experience.
Can you tell that that's from a different – that was shot in a different decade and shot by a different person? I mean, I certainly didn't notice something sticking out like that.
I don't know. What do you think, Mark? I couldn't tell particularly.
No, I don't think I could tell. I mean, there were a few places where we used old-fashioned tricks, and in some cases it was simply because that was what was most affordable. But actually, my most exciting moment on the film came on the second to last day of shooting, when we had to create the sea outside of the Miami restaurant. And we had all kinds of complicated and technical ways of doing it, but what we ultimately ended up affording was a large piece of blue cloth with cellophane, sequins, and a couple of fans. And it's the most beautiful sea I think I've ever been a part of.
My guests are Mark Friedberg, the production designer of the new film Far From Heaven, and Todd Haynes, the film's writer and director. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our interview with Todd Haynes, the writer and director of the new film Far From Heaven, and Mark Friedberg, the film's production designer. Todd Haynes, let's talk about the acting in the movie. Julianne Moore is the star of the film, and she is pregnant. She was pregnant when you shot the film.
Yeah.
And you can kind of tell. I mean, she's wearing skirts that are especially full. She has a kind of bigger waistline than you remember her having in previous films. But everything, you know, she's wearing baggy coats some of the time. But it still works. How did she break the news to you after you cast her that she was actually pregnant?
We were in pre-production, and we were already having a beset with a lot of whatever conflicts just in getting the commitment to the money that we felt the film required at the most minimal level to get made. And then all of a sudden we hear Julianne Moore is pregnant. And that she will probably be close to 6 months pregnant by the time we finish the film, you know. And there was no way of changing. The schedule was completely built around the fall, the leaves. We needed those leaves. And so there was no way to start earlier or obviously go later. That would have been much harder. So it was really the person to really talk to about how hard this was is Sandy Powell, the costume designer, who was not happy about it and had planned.
But I think ultimately – ultimately, on some level, it kind of gave Julianne a more period appearance.
Absolutely.
I think that was a fuller figure, like
movie stars tended to have.
Yeah.
And that was Sandy's brilliance, where she actually made it work for herself.
I agree. And she's bosomy. I mean, she's got these beautiful bosoms, and she's glowy. And I think Julianne Moore looks so amazingly beautiful in this film. A lot of it is how beautiful she is. A lot of it is very careful lighting that Ed Lockman really tried to emulate the Hollywood lighting. But she's glamorously photographed, and she really glows, and it all really does serve the character and the period.
How does her look and the clothing that she's wearing compare to what you had in your mind when you first cast her?
I have to say it really is what I pictured, you know. I mean, maybe she's just a little fuller formed because I just don't think of her that way normally. When you meet Julie, she's tiny and lovely, you know. But she glows, and she looks womanly. And there's that very scene Mark was talking about of Dennis on the couch after the party, with the blue moonlight coming in. When she's trying to comfort him, she's leaning across the couch, and her bosoms form this voluptuous torpedo toward him. And of course, he's cowering in intimidation around his heterosexuality. And here is this swath of cloth, you know. And then her bum is also like this big, beautiful wrap of the sort of satiny cloth, picking up the moonlight and also interacting with the maroon color of the fabric. And it's just an amazing image, I think. And it has a lot to do with the costume and a lot to do with the setting, but a lot to do with her physical state at the time.
Do you think that having made this movie and just kind of drenched yourself in a 1950s approach to movie making with rear projection and working with sound stages and so on, do you think that's going to carry over into future films that you each make?
I don't know. Every film I've made, I think, has been its own kind of delving into a sort of genre and all of the stylistic associations that come with that genre. And for me, they're always learning processes about the period I'm looking at. My film I did before Far From Heaven was called Velvet Goldmine. It was about the glam rock era in the 70s, but it was as much about the kind of drug culture movies that were coming out in the late 60s that I loved as a teenager, and that brought with them a whole set of stylistic terms as well, and that we just dove into, you know. As much as it was about clothes and music, it was about the way the camera works and what the colors were and what the style was of this particular kind of storytelling. So for me, each one becomes an opportunity just to learn more and continue to stretch myself and see the relationship between style and content and how one, they're sort of in the best films that you can't separate them.
Mark?
Well, what I was so struck by is how different this world is from my aesthetic and how much I ended up loving this aesthetic or this the way this... So I'm actually quite worried what's going to happen to me.
Well, I want to thank you both for talking to us about Far From Heaven. Todd Haynes, Mark
thank
Friedberg,
you,
thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Todd Haynes wrote and directed the new film Far From Heaven. Mark Friedberg is the film's production designer.